In many parts of the country, construction is a significant part of the underground economy. In Washington, D.C., men from Central and South America gather near a job site, hoping to be picked up for odd jobs.
Me llamo Carlos Juarez.
My name is Carlos Juarez. I'm from Guatemala. Sometimes I do woodwork, masonry, demolition, and painting.
Demolición, pintura.
The amount of money varies, depending on the season, because when it's cold, you work less. But when it's warm, you can make more money. But I would estimate I make around $300 a week. I don't think what I do is illegal. I've always said that work is a person's right. In whatever country they live, people have to work in order to live. I think the majority of people don't report their earnings because they don't have a regular job. One could report our income if they paid us in checks. But for one day or two of work, it's easier for a boss to say, I'll pay you day by day. I'll pay you so much. And then they pay you in cash. You can't prove that you're working because you don't have documentation.
That was a day laborer named Carlos Juarez on a street corner in the nation's capital earlier this week. The underground economy also reaches into the middle class and places like sports bars.
My name is Gary Gibbs. I am a database administrator for a hospital, and every year we have an NCAA pool, and we also have a Super Bowl pool. Annually, I probably bet maybe about $50 a year. I have won it a couple times. Winning it means you win about $250. Taxes absolutely do not come into consideration whatsoever when we talk about these pools. We know this is illegal, but it's illegal like jaywalking is illegal. It's illegal like going 60 on a 55 mile an hour zone is illegal. I don't worry about getting caught by the police or anything like that. I have worried sometimes that there may be implications on my job. So that's why we always make sure that top management is involved whenever we do these things.
That was Gary Gibbs of suburban Maryland. Whether it's the office betting pool or people working off the books, the underground economy is not going away. Richard Epstein is a professor of law at the University of Chicago. He's on a fellowship right now at Stanford University, and he joins us to discuss some of the legal questions raised by the underground economy. Welcome to the program, Professor.
It's very nice to be here.
Now, we just heard from a gentleman, Gary Gibbs, talk about his office betting pool, and to his mind, betting at work is small time, like jaywalking or perhaps driving slightly above the speed limit. Is he right to think about it that way?
Well, either he's right about it or everybody in the United States is going to be in jail. I think that every system has to have a set of rules in which things are not legal in the sense that they're not going to be regarded as praiseworthy by the state, but they're certainly not going to be something that's going to be punished. And so gambling has always had this kind of uneasy tone about it, but when it's done small, when there's no organized crime, when there's no muscle, when it's all done amongst friends, if anybody wants to divert criminal resources into that as opposed to the really serious things, he would be deeply misguided. So what happens is public officials will not support it. Public officials will ignore it.
Now, we also heard in Jim Zarilli's report from a woman named Sherelle. She runs a babysitting business out of her home. Can Sherelle expect to hear from the government, perhaps pay a fine, get arrested?
I doubt it very much. What happens is if you try to tax this business or subject it to regulations and to Social Security payments and everything else, the whole thing will dry up. Simply stated, the gains from these transactions are very small on both sides, and the taxes and the regulations exceed the amount of the gains. There's nobody in government who wants people to miss their regular jobs because they can't get babysitting of one kind or another.
Sounds like the government essentially looks the other way, but when it comes to working off the books, is there a scale in terms of violations? Are there high crimes or perhaps less significant misdemeanors?
Sure. I have no question about that. To give the example that you gave, if somebody goes into the back room and there's a tailor shop with 20 people there doing $25,000 worth of business a month, you could be sure that if the government found out about it, that that would be the subject of some serious criminal prosecution. There is a built-in sort of upper bound as to how far and how rich and how powerful this kind of economy can be.
If the prosecution is not worth the effort to local, state, or federal governments, it seems counterintuitive. I mean, why have laws on the books if you're not enforcing them?
Well, what happens is you want to have the laws on the books, not because you want to get the babysitter, but because you need to have them in order to get the organized commercial situations. There's also something else, Michelle, about this, which is that many of the people who work in the underground economy are the most vulnerable portions of the population to begin with. And so if you really want to start mounting an attack to create class war and resentments, what you really have to do is to tell these folks either they have to work in the overground economy or whatever we wish to call it, in the legal economy, at which point they won't be able to make a living, or they're going to have to do without work whatsoever. And the truth is, we don't want to put people on welfare. We would rather have them work in the underground economy. And this thing has been like this for 20, 30, 50, 100 years. And when you see an equilibrium which lasts for that long, it's not very likely that it's going to turn one way or another anytime soon.
Professor Epstein, good to talk to you. That was Professor Richard Epstein. He teaches law at the University of Chicago, and he joined us from Stanford University. Thanks so much.
It was my pleasure.